In a world full of distractions, there is one big question on every dog owner's lips.
How do I become more than just the person holding the other end of the leash?
We all get dogs with a dream in mind, a vision of the future. And if right now your everyday reality isn't quite that picture you had in mind, you are in the right place.
It really doesn't have to be this way.
You absolutely can and will be more to your dog than just the person who gets in between them and the world.
The key is, you need to be more sexy.
More sexy than the neighbourhood cat.
More sexy than the jogger in the park.
More sexy than that half-eaten hamburger they just found on the floor.
And yes, even more sexy than the dog across the road.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lauren.
Together we're Absolute Dogs.
And you're listening to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast.
Welcome to this episode of the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast, the podcast that teaches you how to be the very best dog owner your dog could ever wish for and unlock real life results in your dog training.
Now, today we're talking about one of our most passionate, our most loved, our most, I suppose, also familiar areas, an area that I know for sure many of you come here for, that is naughty but nice dogs. We know them as NBN dogs. You might know that abbreviation too. And if you don't, and if you kind of go, oh my goodness, that is my dog naughty but nice, we are that center, right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And so what is a naughty but nice dog? They maybe bark and lunge at other dogs, maybe they bark and lunge at people, or maybe they're really worried and kind of shy away from other dogs or people. Maybe they're unpredictable with other dogs. Maybe they're fine with dogs and people, but they kind of love them a bit too much and they're running up to them and causing chaos in the park and they're just not listening. They're very much kind of victims of their own emotions.
Now, I've got Blink sat with me. Blink kind of decided at that moment she might come up and introduce herself. And the thing is with Blink, you might consider Blink to be an angel. I mean, she's won at Crufts. She's won some of the major events. She's been at World Championship. She's a really cool little dog. And yet, when I started working with Blink, when we started our relationship, off you go, you sit there for a minute. When I started working with Blink, she was very typically naughty but nice in a few areas. Now, one of those, there's her squeaking, that's her. One of those areas was actually, I think that might annoy everyone. Come here, you. I'm going to take Puss in Boots away. One of those areas was actually being left alone. She was a really, really difficult dog to leave alone because whenever you left alone, her alone, she would be howling the place down, which didn't only upset my dad, who's in one of the neighbouring houses. She also then would upset the holiday cottages and other dogs in the house. And actually that made her naughty but nice. And yet it wasn't something that she was deliberately being difficult. And lots of people kind of, they don't like their dogs behaving like this, but they don't know what to do, right, Tom? So those sorts of things as well.
And often what can happen as an owner of maybe, let's say, a dog with struggles, naughty but nice, is that you maybe go for training help and you get advice. And it might be that you've been told there's no hope or that your dog's untrainable or that it's going to be difficult. And, you know, you start off with like the best of intentions. You know that you can help your dog. You know that, you know, they show so many good decisions in so many great situations. There are just a few where they struggle. You know there's hope. And over the years, you start to kind of lose hope because people really kind of disempower you and take away what you think is something that's totally in your control and that you can impact. And they actually take that power away from you.
One of the ones that lots of people said to me with Blink was, oh, you won't stop that. She's already sort of 10 months old. She's learned that. That's what she does. You won't stop that. And the other one she did was lots of trigger barking. So she would bark if she was worried by anything. And actually, I would say pretty much in day-to-day life, that isn't how she walks. That isn't who she is. That isn't what she's like out and about. So actually, these things, I think it's empowering to know you guys can make a difference because Tom and I both know that you can. And Tom and I have both worked with, well, thousands and thousands of naughty but nice dogs all over the world. And also, I think most importantly, we have owned and do still own naughty but nice dogs.
Absolutely.
And for us, it's a loving way of describing sometimes our very lovable rogues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the key is, and this is what we want to talk to you about today, there are really kind of three steps to success with working with a naughty but nice dog, with transforming their behavior struggles into real strengths and achieving that kind of dog ownership team and companion that you always wanted. And the first step is that what a lot of training involves is putting your naughty but nice dog in the situations and that they struggle.
This is very typical, right? Yeah. Tom, like of any dog training class, you guys might have gone to a dog training class in the last year or 2 years or 3 years, or you may have booked into one in the future.
Yeah.
The thing is, dog training classes typically put the dog in the situation. Yeah. Even if it's a very simple one, like put the food out and then cover it and see if the dog can actually take food away from the dog is the situation that they might be put into. Yeah. Or put them up against another dog and see if up against another dog they can handle it. So lots of putting them in those situations.
If we need to train them to walk nicely on a lead, let's stick them on a lead and walk them up and down. The key is that the reason why these behaviors are happening is because your naughty but nice dogs, they have a lot of strengths. And you're thinking, strengths? I don't know if they have strengths. They do have strengths. They just might not be the strengths for the situation they find themselves in. And so what we've got is a mismatch between that dog's personality, their underlying strengths, their weaknesses, and the requirements of the situation. And if we keep putting them in the situation and trying to either tell them what they should do, or worse still, tell them what they should not be doing, all we're doing is we're effectively forcing that square peg of that brain shaped in that way into a round hole of those requirements of the situation that can't be met. And so at best, what you achieve by doing that is a dog who, I don't know, understands that they sit in front of dogs when they are on lead in this very specific scenario of the dog park. But then when presented with a horse, when presented with a cow, when presented with a sheep, when presented with a dog in a different context, when presented with a dog and they're off lead, actually those choices don't move forward because we've not changed their brain. We've not reshaped their brain. All we've done is taught them effectively a party trick because we've been working in the situation.
And that is, I think, the risk that a lot of modern dog training classes kind of find themselves sort of in, really.
Yeah.
They find themselves in that place where the dog can do it under performance party trick pressure, but actually in real life scenarios, and you guys might have felt this, or you might know this, or you might have experienced this in real life. A great example, I'll give you a really good example. I'm training in agility. I'm at an agility event, and they're doing agility and the dog will behave in the agility ring. Take the dog out of the ring and they can't even catch the dog. Mm. So actually they can't even get the dog back on lead. The dog will not come back on lead. Can do the agility, can do the jumping, but actually has no ability to recall or to come near the owner.
Yeah.
And yet in these sort of show party trick environment looks very well behaved. Mm. Actually away from that environment, take it away from that ring and they can't get the dog near them. So it's such a typical sort of, we see it, right?
Exactly. And the other sign that you might see with, you know, in the situation training is that if you don't have the food on you or the food isn't quite tasty enough, well, the dog's behaviors just don't transfer. The good behavior just doesn't transfer. Or if those of you who have maybe had trainers wrongly advise you about like aversive intimidation, punishment based methods, if you don't have the thing that you're using to punish the dog, you know, if they're not attached to a lead where you can give them those pops of the lead, then, well, actually their behavior doesn't transfer again.
An example of that, I said to Tom only the other day, I was really horrified to have this sort of really cute puppy video pop up on my screen. Lovely little beardy it was. And the title, and it looked really bright and funky and good colors and everything.
Yeah.
And then it said how to teach your puppy, or how to teach your dog heel work with a prong collar. Mm. And I was just horrified that that's the sort of thing that happens. But at the same time, because really like that isn't the world that Tom and I have grown up in. And it's certainly not the world that we teach. So for me, that's the sort of situation where that dog can do it with the prong collar on, but actually take that prong collar off and there is nothing. And not only that, but you've also actively damaged that relationship. So for me, it was like a massive awakening to the fact that this is still happening and it's dressed in a really nice sort of colourful video.
Yeah.
So just a bit of an awakening, guys.
So how do we do it? How should we do it? What's that kind of first step to success? Well, what we've got to do is we've got to not focus on the outcome, not focus on the behavior your dog's doing, but rather focus on their brain as it's currently shaped, focus on its strengths, focus on its weaknesses, and say, you know what, that's a totally fluid brain. You know, it's that what represents one of the most flexible brains on the planet. Somewhere right now, there is a big dog taking down a criminal. Somewhere else in the world right now, there is a chihuahua living in a handbag, right? That is a flexible, adaptable, changeable brain.
And you guys know it is truth. Yeah. You guys are giggling away too because you know it is truth. And there's that Malinois.
Yeah.
He's bringing down a criminal. He's literally taken him to the ground and his officer is asking him to hold that person. And on the flip side, you heard it, there's a chihuahua in a rather nice handbag.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, guys, that you also know this in relation to your own dog. You would have had that experience of, I don't know, your dog, when you first got them, they behaved in a certain way. Maybe they were optimistic. Maybe they were calm. But some of you would have had bad events happen to your dog. Maybe they got attacked by another dog, or maybe they got freaked out by a firework, and you started to see that brain change to one, from one of optimism to one of pessimism. Now, as humans, we're always very aware of the negative changes that can happen, but we don't acknowledge that that means that positive changes can happen as well. And so, how is a brain shaped? How does a brain change? Well, it changes based on what it's experiencing all the time, what it's experiencing day by day. And so what we do and what we know to really be transformational for these naughty but nice dogs is play games every day. And in turn, what you'll see is that brain start to adapt. And the example that I give, kind of two examples that really spell this out, because we've all been there as humans. You have a really bad week at work where bad outcome after bad outcome gets thrown at you. Bad things happen. On Friday afternoon, your boss sends you an email and says, "Can I see you in my office? We need to have a chat." Now, that is just a very ambiguous email.
And could be actually they want to have a chat about giving you a pay rise.
It could be positive.
It could be a positive review. It could be that a client's touched base and said how much they loved having you as their educator or their vet or their whatever you are. And yet,
because you've had that week of full of bad outcomes, actually you think it's something bad. I'm going to get fired. It's the end. Now, on the flip side of that, imagine that feeling of how do you feel when someone taps you on the shoulder in the street. I know that for a lot of you, you'll be like, oh gosh, I've dropped something. Oh gosh, something's happened. Oh gosh, they, you know, I don't know, I forgot to put my trousers on. I don't know.
Tom.
I don't know. But the cool thing is that if I walk down the street and I tap you on the shoulder and I give you, I don't know, £5 or $5 or €5, wherever you are in the world, and you're like, oh, okay, thank you. And then you walk another two steps, I tap you on the shoulder again. Here's another £5, dollars, euros. You take another two steps, tap you on the shoulder again. By the fourth time that I'm tapping you on the shoulder, you're expecting a positive outcome,
maybe even the second or third, depending on the type of person
maybe
you are.
You're optimistic. Maybe first tap of the shoulder, you're like, he's gonna give me money, it's gonna happen. That's pretty cool if you do think like that. So guys, what we're saying is that actually our brains and our dog's brains are shaped by history. Now, the cool thing is we can take control of that. We can play games that provide our dogs with positive outcomes. Very cool. The other thing that we've got to be aware of in this is that over time of owning our naughty but nice dogs, our brains have probably been shaped in the more kind of pessimistic viewpoint.
So let's give an example of that, and that would be, I know for sure, Poppy was my most sort of memorable of naughty but nice dogs that I've ever worked with, and she was my own dog. But for me, she very much taught me that when other dogs came over to worry, and so I became very anxious when in the presence of other dogs.
Yeah.
And I know that there'd been lots of judgment from people around me, or I felt judgment for sure, whether it was there or whether it wasn't. I felt very sort of worried by what other people were thinking, and maybe I could have been a better owner, and maybe I should have trained her better, and maybe I didn't socialize her correctly, or there were so many sort of anxieties or worries that I didn't do a good job by her. But the biggest thing I would say, and this, I mean, this was sort of, we're talking sort of 18, 19 years ago, the biggest thing with Poppy that I remember is whenever a dog was coming, or if I could hear a dog's collar or like jangle of the tags or anything like that, I would become aware, vigilant, alert, let's even say potentially anxious, maybe worried about what type of dog it was or who was going to come around the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Tom and I working together actually at one point, and then I had Poppy and I was coming up from the field, and I had all the dogs actually, and I was wandering up, and you'd come into the yard and you had Illy, and that's Tom's large standard black poodle. And I remember thinking, oh my God, she's going to eat Tom's standard black poodle. This is not good for our relationship. And I was absolutely like in like mild sweats about the idea that she might hurt Tom's dog. Now let's put it straight. Poppy was not like this big like dog killer. She was really a rather anxious, highly strong border collie female who actually didn't like dogs in her proximity. But I became, as an owner, very, very consciously, constantly aware, I think.
And it's so, you know, with all the thousands of naughty but nice dog owners that we've worked with,
many,
consistently, we've both been there of actually telling a story long before it's happened, because we're in this mindset of, oh my gosh, something terrible is going to happen. So the cool thing about this games-based approach is that you play games outside of the situation. That in turn reshapes your dog's brain so that they're better in the situation, but also you start to have some positive outcomes and with your dog as well.
You're empowered in it. Now let's take a great dog like Bet. So Bet kind of looks more like a Kelpie possibly than a collie.
Kelpie, little Kelpie,
little piggy tail at times. She's a funny girl. But the thing with Bet is that actually she could probably be very, very similar and yet handled so differently because we are both in a much better position to understand what to do with a strong border collie bitch or a bitch that could notice things.
Yeah.
And actually, even more importantly, we were both settled about it. So we kind of have almost like got the t-shirt, like, the badge and everything to prove it. We're in the position that we understand it. But Bet probably in lots of ways, equally.
In that natural personality type, could have done. But what happened is that we actively reshaped her brain. And honestly, like if you kind of just had some, like, you know, like that audio description where the kind of what is happening visually is explained explained in the audio. If you had that on Bet's behavior, even with like her interaction with another dog, or, you know, I don't know, walking down the street and hearing fireworks and whatever else, you'd think this is not a herding breed dog. This is maybe a Labrador.
You would say perhaps? Labrador. I would say the way she behaves is a Labrador.
Yeah, certainly has the feebiness of a Labrador.
Poor Bet. We've already called her a Kelpie and a Labrador.
Yes, like Kelpie plus Labrador.
But that is how she behaves, right?
And that's a really good example of where you are right now is not where you need to stay.
And that absolutely, I don't think in a lot of people's hands she would have been that, because actually she had very, very strong tendencies to be a little like Poppy at times. And yet it was handled so differently. You were calm, I was calm. The games she trained always were optimistic, positive, flexible, optimist games, I suppose. And actually that's the way she was shaped, and that's the way you brought her up to be.
Absolutely. And so the first kind of step in this process is we need to move to the world of game playing, being a game changer. And, you know, you're listening to this, and so you probably already are a game changer and have played some of the games and seen some real life results. And so you're absolutely certain on that. But there's kind of a couple more steps that we need to talk about. And the second step is, it's all well and good being convinced on games and being convinced that games will reshape your dog's brain. But the reason why they reshape your dog's brain is because they become the daily experiences of your dog, which means that something has to happen, and that is daily action. All we're asking you to do is play a game, but every day you just need to be playing a bit of a game.
I think the important thing is here, and I'm going to give you a very different context, but I've been teaching one of my dogs to do a behavior for agility, and the thing that makes it come together is really the daily action.
Yeah,
it's not
action,
the one
games.
Big off sessions. Mm-hmm. Like the people say, one big off, one off big session. The thing that makes a huge difference is those little bits that you do every day. And I was talking to a friend of mine who I coach and work with quite frequently. And she was like, I've done this and I've made a big thing of it. I was like, don't make a big thing of it. This is a little thing you do every day. It doesn't even go on your to-do list. It's not a to-do.
Yeah.
It's something you do as a matter. It's a bit like cleaning your teeth. You don't write it on your to-do list. This is just something that you get to do.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely make it ritual. I would make it a ritual. I'd make it a habit. I'd make it intentional. Intentionally, this is how I do it, and this is what I do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the funny funny little example of that, literally just from today, basically, Madeline, my partner, had somehow been sent the one of the videos from the YouTube channel that's just gone out, and it's little Magma learning middle for the first time. And the funny thing is Madeline says to me, you know, it's really funny you describe her as an inexperienced dog, and I forget that she is actually an inexperienced dog, because she's, you know, she just kind of is part of the household and is totally
she
cool
just
with
fits
everything
in. She's
and
cool,
totally
isn't she?
Cool with walks. But then she was like, but in hindsight I think about it and I've never seen you do a training session with her. I'm like, to be honest, she's never done a training session. Actually, it's just, you know, little games all the time that shape that brain.
And she's probably,
and that's more important.
She's probably one of the easiest dogs we've put on camera to date. And yet it's those little bits that happen all the time that move the needle, because they make the difference in the sense that, I mean, you've got that great sort of calculation that you probably don't want to remember offhand.
Yeah, it's like 1% every day, 1% improvement every day over the course of 365 days adds up to a 36 or 37 fold improvement. If you do a 3% boost, you know, maybe it's play a few games every day, whenever your dog hops on a boundary, you know, feed them, teach them where the value is, little things like that. 3% improvement every day over the course of 365 days. It's not insane. A linear increase. What that is an exponential increase. And so it's something like a 46,000 fold improvement based on where you are right now and where you're going to be. So it really is that kind of daily consistent action. And really, when we talk about action, it sounds really scary, but it actually is just play a game. Now, that leads on to the third kind of component of this formula, and that is, it's all well and good being convinced on the games, it's all well and good playing a game every day, but when it comes to naughty but nice dogs, you need to play the right games.
And you need to play the right games for the right naughty but nice dog.
In
the right order, because each naughty but nice dog is going to be different. So yeah. Blink's naughty but nice was howling when alone, stealing things, diving in water that was not appropriate, and maybe a level of spook barking. Poppy's naughty but nice was very much other dogs and strangers and things that were surprising her. Yeah. There were different naughty but nice struggles, and so they'd have had they would both have different, I suppose, menu of choice. Mm. So even though we would give choice in the games, there would still be a different framework for both dogs.
Absolutely. You know, and the cool thing is that we know the games that are transformational for naughty but nice dogs. And the reason why we know it is because, and some of you will remember this, and if you do remember this and you've got memories of us doing this, then we'd love to hear from you. Email in. A program that we used to run, we've not run it for about 4-5 years now, and it was called the Naughty But Nice Spring Into Transformation. And basically what it was is, knowing this formula of, we need to play games, we need to take action every day, and we need to play the right games based on our naughty but nice dogs. We did a 9-week program where 5 days a week we would play games, and there'd be some homework at the weekend. And honestly, the dogs that jumped into this program, some of them had been told there's no hope so many times their owners had lost count. And by the end of the 9 weeks, because there was that, you know, 1%, 3% improvement each and every day, they're in a totally different place. And I was talking to some of our training academy students about this only yesterday, and a lovely, amazing game changer called Sarah sent a comment in on the live feed and said, I did that, and Seamus was totally transformed through that process. Now, the funny thing is since that program 4 or 5 years ago, we've both met Seamus, and he is...
You would never know it.
You would not know he was ever a naughty but nice dog.
Perfectly well behaved. Lovely, lovely Sarah. And to be honest, he's just like one of the best behaved border collies.
He's like a dream.
I have ever met, really. And so we wouldn't know it other than she told us.
Yeah. And so we literally, I was like, oh my goodness.
Like,
wow.
Taken back by that.
Yeah. It took me back to all those transformations that were made possible through that program. Now, we know this formula is effective. We know this formula has transformed thousands of dogs all over the world. We need to play games. We need to take daily action, and we need to play the right games and keep changing the games. Yeah, we can't just play the same game over and over again.
Each dog and each person, that there's like their own flavor. There's their own sort of tweaking. There's their own, like, what I love is this is not like a fixed, there's a great menu of choice. And I think that's important. And I think that it's important to make sure that you guys recognize this, owning these dogs, is that one trainer might tell you this is one size fits all. This is not the case with these dogs. And that's where I think it's really important that we share journeys that we've had, so that you guys can see exactly that.
Absolutely. And so with that, what we'd love to do is, we'd love to invite you on your naughty but nice journey, because what we're doing is something really cool. And that is that we've created a brand new challenge based on this three-step formula. It's a 7-day challenge. We're going to be doing a naughty but nice game day after day. We're going to be doing some teaching on, you know, how we work with naughty but nice dogs alongside that. There's a Facebook support group. There's live teaching running alongside it. And the cool thing is that the challenge starts this week. So you're going to want to get involved in it.
And you're going to want to get involved right now. Like, this is something that you don't sit on the fence with. This is something that you don't think, oh, I'll maybe look at it in the future. This is something that you go, I'm in. I'm all in. Hell yeah. Get me on this, right?
Yeah. So the way that you can find out all about it, get involved, you know, commit to taking daily action for your naughty but nice dog and transforming your dog this year, saying line in the sand, enough is enough, let's do this, is by going to Absolute Dogs, all one word, absolutedogs.me/NBN challenge. That's absolutedogs.me/NBN for naughty but nice. Challenge. absolutedogs.me/NBN challenge.
Now, the cool thing is, this is an opportunity for you to share this challenge. This is an opportunity for you to tell other people about this challenge. This is an opportunity for you to make sure everybody knows about this challenge. I think we have a little person joining in this challenge right now, don't we, in the background? We've got a couple of dogs sitting with us, ready to do some camera work. And I think someone is very sleepy and making little noises. But anyway, it's good because you guys get to know that is exactly what we're working with. So, you know what? I want you to share this. I want you to let other people know about it. I want you, this is the chance to do it right now. Yeah. Now, I think the important thing about this challenge, though, is actually how much is it going to cost, Tom, and how much time is it going to take? Because I think that people always want to know that.
Absolutely. And we know that so many of you are kind of at home right now. You need to homeschool your dog. You need to work on these struggles. And so what we've done is we've made it very accessible. You can get involved in the challenge for just £7 or $10, and you get to keep the challenge content for life.
That's insane. £7, right? £7. That means that everybody can jump in, right? You'd hope. And absolutely. So actually, this is your opportunity to make a difference with your with your dog. This is when people say, oh, wait, and I'm going to see what happens in the future. This is not a wait moment, right? This is like, why wait? Jump in right now and share it to anybody you know with a dog, because this is the best time to be involved in it, right? At the sort of fun, the excitement, at the sort of like root of it all, like get involved now.
Absolutely. So with that, guys, we will see you in the challenge. It starts right now. So get involved. There's a quiz at the end of each day. You're going to want to make sure you do those quizzes because it unlocks a cool prize at the end.
Dog training. There is some geeky science. There is, and this is every single day, and there is also some really cool sort of mental coaching within it.
Absolutely.
So I think it's going to keep you in a good space, whether you're in a lockdown or you're out of a lockdown or you're coming into a lockdown or whatever's going on for you at home right now. It's going to keep the energy up. It's going to inspire, lift, transform, enlighten, awaken. You're going
to
love it.
Absolutely. So with that, guys, head to absolutedogs.me/NBN challenge. We will see you in the challenge, guys, and we'll see you next week in the next episode of the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. Remember,
stay sexy.
Hey, before you go, have you taken part in the worldwide Sexier Than a Squirrel challenge?
It's a 25-day online video program. Huge energy, amazing community, and over 6,000 people are already taking part.
The only question is, you know where you are today, where do you want to be 25 days from now? Head to absolutedogs.me/sexy.